With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Queen's Club Quarterfinals Day. This is the Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Today, Andy Murray beats Kyle Edmund in the Battle of Britain.
Kyle's the future of the game in this country, so he's doing great. He's improving every single year.
To play Andy, he's been, you know, so good to me. He's last three pre-seasons I spent with him, give me a lot of information, insight, you know, into his professional life.
We'll be previewing the semi-finals as Murray faces Cilic and Raonic, Tomic, and during this pod, you will notice that it is a little legend-heavy.
Best players in the world are playing, and that brings back the memories, and I can't believe it's 31 years ago. In a way, it seemed like it was yesterday.
Well, I'm honoured to be here. This was one of my favourite tournaments in the circuit.
I've kind of got to pinch myself to think that I'm up there with the likes of Becker and McEnroe and these guys.
This was actually my first tournament after I turned pro in 1978, and I lost to a guy by the name of Tony Roach, who taught me a thing or two about volleying that day, so I always vowed to myself I'd try to be as good as him.
So that's Leighton Hewitt, Boris Becker, Roy Emerson and John McEnroe all coming up on tonight's podcast. And speaking of legends, I, Catherine Whittaker, am joined once again by Gigi Salmon. And Gigi, again, we should probably explain our location because it's a familiar scene with familiar sounds, isn't it? We're overlooking the centre court. We are, in fact, in the photographer's enclosure directly at court level. This is where they get all sorts of photos, and behind us is the clubhouse, and once again there's rather a lot of merriment, isn't there?
And can I say thank you very much, but I'm not sure about that introduction. But in terms of the members, it's quite rowdy this evening, and it's because it's a Friday night, so I think this lot are bedded in for the evening. There is no end of the world scenario this evening. The sky looks pretty good, so I think they are bedded in for a few hours of drinking.
We're going to stop talking about the weather on this podcast because weather forecasts seem to have become completely meaningless. Every time we predict that there's going to be no play whatsoever, we have a full glorious day of sunshine. So we're moving on from the weather. We're going to talk about Andy Murray, 6-4, 3-6, 6-1 defeat of Kyle Edmund. What a match that was. It really kind of over-delivered, I think, on people's expectations. A very good performance from Kyle Edmund. But again, it's just the difference in class of Andy Murray, isn't it?
It wasn't. It's interesting. After the match, all the questions were being asked about Kyle Edmund because we know what Andy Murray can do, and I think most of us would have expected him to win. It was the performance of Kyle Edmund. But you have to look at Andy Murray and what he did. And he dropped that second set and he came back and he just put his foot down in the decider to make his way through. Kyle Edmund, what stood out for me was the composure of Kyle Edmund. Under pressure, he played the big points, he mixed things up, he wasn't afraid of facing the guy who he's been the hitting partner of, who he's gone to the training camp with. He just came out here and played his game, and boy, is Kyle Edmund a talent.
Absolutely. And in terms of how Edmund will respond to this, I cast my mind back to Doha in January of this year, where he reached his first tour level quarterfinal. He played Thomas Burdick. He was pretty roundly beaten, a lot more so than he was today by Andy Murray. And I spoke to him after that match, and his brow was furrowed because he was already deep in thought about how he could learn from it, how could he could improve on it. And I'm sure his brow is furrowed just now, and he's deep in thought in just the same way about how he can learn from this one.
exactly. We're sitting here going, well done, Kyle, wasn't that great? But he'll be thinking, well, hang on a second, I'm a professional tennis player. I wanted to be in the semi-finals. It's not pat on the back and off you go, you were never going to win. He'll be thinking, this is the kind of match I want to win. And what we saw from him out here was fantastic in terms of what he did out here on the court to get that set, to get the break. Got the break in the first, got the break in the second, was broken back, then regained the lead. Then he managed to close it out under pressure. And yes, Andy Murray, the class shone through in the deciding set. But so many positives, and a few people I spoke to, Colin Fleming especially, said he cannot believe the improvement in Kyle Edmund and what he's seeing from him. And so his brow is furrowed, and so it should be, because this is his job to continually improve. But I think from our point of view, we can say it was a great performance, and it was really good to see Brit against Brit on centre court in the quarterfinals.
Absolutely. It was very interesting, wasn't it? I think he played a very tactically astute match, Edmund. And in fact, Andy Murray commented on that in his press conference. He said he's been very impressed with Kyle's coach, Ryan Jones, and particularly impressed today with the tactics he brought in into the match. He was pouncing, wasn't he, Edmund, on any bit of defensiveness. If Andy wasn't the one to get the first strike in, Kyle Edmund was going right in there. Do you think Lendl will have been slightly disappointed with an element of defensiveness in Andy's game today?
I don't know. I think Lendl is still looking at everything. It's early in this part two of this partnership. I don't think Andy Murray has been playing the most amazing tennis all week, but he's been playing enough to get by. The conditions a little slippery. We saw him take a really heavy tumble, and he was really stretching out the groin area, lifting that leg for a few fair few points after that, because these courts are so slidey, especially on the lush green edges of the centre court. Lendl, there will be a few things for him to work on, but that's why he's been brought in, because we talk about Kyle's furrowed brow and where he wants to go. Andy Murray is a world number two, but he wants to try and eat into some of that lead that Novak Djokovic has. And I was speaking to Boris Becker a little bit later, and I asked him what was the difference between the two at Roland Garros, and he simply said the difference was the 5 extra hours that Andy Murray had spent on court. That was the difference between the two of them.
Well, why don't we hear from both of them, Andy Murray and Kyle Edmund. This is their take on that match.
Was that a little bit tougher than you might have expected?
No, I mean, obviously train with Kyle a lot, so, you know, I know how good he is. You know, he is a big, strong guy, very powerful game, and, you know, when he's on, he's very tough to play against in practice, and I felt it in the match as well today, so I expected it to be hard.
What were your thoughts at one set apiece?
It was obviously a bit disappointing to lose the second. I lost serve up 40 love in that set, and then had a couple of break back chances just after that, and Kyle served extremely well there, and yeah, I just tried to up my intensity, try and be a little bit more aggressive in the beginning of the set. And
10 years ago, you played Tim Henman, and we made a big point yesterday about the fact you were playing Ali Ashbedene, the first time you played a British player for 10 years. I'm sure if somebody had asked Tim Henman 10 years ago, is the future of British tennis in pretty good hands about you, he'd have said very safe hands. What's your impression about the future of British tennis in 4 or 5, however many years' time it is when you decide to go and do something else?
Well, obviously, you know, Kyle's the future of the game in this country, so you know, it's important that, you know, he's given time to develop at his own rate, that not, you know, too much pressure is put on him. And, you know, he's doing great. He's improving every single year. He's got a really, really good team behind him. I've spent quite a lot of time with them, and, you know, they work him very hard, and they're good guys. So, you know, if he's given time and a little bit of space just to keep developing and not too much pressure on the results at this stage, then, you know, he can go very far.
And a big hand for Kyle Edmund, who played such a fantastic part in that match. And, you know, you're a hugely professional athlete, and you'll be disappointed by the result, but I hope you're enormously proud of how you played today.
You know, no one likes losing, but once you had time to reflect, it's important you take away the positives. It's been a very positive week for me. Obviously fortunate with the withdrawal yesterday, but I did well to come through my first round, and yeah, I thought I played well today, but Andy showed why he's been so tough to beat and why he's been at the top of the game for so many years, because he just always makes it tough for you when it really matters.
One of the big positives for you must be breaking his serve 3 times. Not many players do that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really think about that. You're in the match, just concentrating on every point, and that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to find little ways to break him, and it's tricky, but especially on grass, if you do break him, you're going to take your opportunities. And luckily, I thought at 3-1 when I lost my serve, I felt I should have held, but as Andy said from Love 40, that was a game you don't expect to win, but you take it and try and serve it out.
Andy Murray and Kyle Edmund there talking about their quarterfinal, which Andy Murray came through in three sets. The other results from quarterfinals day, Marin Cilic, he beat Steve Johnson really narrowly, 6-7, 6-3, 6-4. Roberto Bautista Agut, after coming through his second round match, the resumption thereof against Donald Young, he came through that. Then he had to come out and play Milos Raonic, and he did get pretty roundly beaten, 6-1, 6-4. Very impressive from Milos Raonic that he looked pretty clinical today.
1 hour on court, and when you're serving like that, it is difficult to get anything on it. It is such a weapon in the Raonic game. Today it was working. He was coming in, still maybe not 100% crisp on the volleys at the net, but I'm sure John McEnroe can work with him on that. But in terms of the game he was playing from the back of the court, using the weapons, maximising his potential, 1 hour, job done, Raonic through.
And McEnroe had him in the gym afterwards. That was not enough of a workout from McEnroe's perspective. And Raonic will play Bernard Tomic in the semi-final because he beat Gilles Muller 7-6, 4-6, 6-2. We will be previewing that semi-final shortly. But first, we must explain something rather special that happened at the Queen's Club today, because there was a really, really glorious presentation on the centre court to honour the tournament's four-time champions. There are eight of them. Not all of them are still with us. Not all of them that are still with us were with us today, but four of them were, and they were Leighton Hewitt, Boris Becker, John McEnroe, and amazingly Roy Emerson, and they were awarded replica trophies to keep to honour their being four-time champions. How special was that to see all of them in the same place?
It was really nice to see them chatting in the middle of centre court ahead of those little interview with each of them. And the replica trophies, we were thinking, wow, do these guys need yet another trophy? Boris Becker actually said to me that he was going to give it to his six-year-old son because he's now coming up to that age, and he obviously he wasn't around when he was winning all the trophies. So he's going to go home and say, look, Dad won another trophy. But it was really nice to have them all together. Look at the generations of players down on centre court, and it was a really nice thing that the championship did to bring them together and to honour them.
And all four of them celebrated that honour by speaking to the Tennis Podcast. We do have interviews with all of them tonight. First of all, we can bring you Boris Becker. It all started for him here in 1985. He was 17 years old. He walked through the gates. He won the title. And, of course, he went on to win Wimbledon 3 weeks later. I spoke to him after he received that replica trophy today, and he was clearly very chuffed.
It was another beautiful reminder today that all the recipients were very much part of the history of the Queen's Club. And the ones playing behind us actually is in the run to win it five times. No, it's a great day, and even his son appreciated it because it's out right now. It's the first time I've seen her in a couple of days. No, it's a great day.
And of course, this is where it all started for you as a 17-year-old back in 1985. What are your memories of that, and do they all come flooding back to you as you walk through the gates here?
Well, I live in town now for the last couple of years, so I come to the club on a regular basis, but it's always special when a tournament starts and the crowd is full and the best players in the world are playing, and that brings back the memories. And I can't believe it's 31 years ago. In a way, it seems like it was yesterday. On the other hand, it was before internet, before colour TV. So imagine how long ago.
How would 17-year-old Boris Becker get on in the tournament today, do you think?
That's difficult to say. You know, generations play differently. We had different rackets, different shoes. On the other hand, you know, the good players were always good. You know, we saw McEnroe next to me. He's older. So I think the best ones were always good in competition and loved playing one another.
And you mentioned McEnroe. John McEnroe, the coach. Did you ever think you'd see the day?
I haven't. I talked to him just before. And, he understands the game better than most. He's been probably the best sports commentator, and before that he was one of the best players of all time, so I think it's a natural choice for him to be on the sidelines again.
And finally, I have to ask you about Andy Murray getting back together with Ivan Lendl, his coach, to his biggest rival. What do you make of that?
I just spoke to Ivan before. I'm happy to see him back. He was one of the greatest players of all time. They had a successful relationship. Andy won his two majors with Ivan on his sideline. And I think it's sort of a natural fit that they're back together.
Well, Boris Becker there, he was a four-time champion at the Queen's Club. Firstly in 1985, then 87, 88, and finally in 96. Only one of the four-time champions, of the eight of them, won those four titles consecutively, and that was Roy Emerson. Between 1962 and 1965, Emerson played in five finals, and he won four of them, as I say, in a row. When I caught up with him earlier, I wanted to know how the club had changed.
We didn't have the huge stands that we have here, and we really didn't have them being televised. So it's quite different. They didn't have the sponsors or the sponsorship that they have in these particular days. So it was a big difference.
I'm intrigued. What was the players' lounge like back then? Because now it's this enormous expanse. It's basically an entertainment centre. What was it like back in your day?
We didn't have any players' entertainment section. No. We just had the men's dressing room because we shared it with the members and so forth. And it was a much smaller scale.
So how would you pass the time during a rain delay?
Just sit in the dressing room and wait till it's over.
Well, Andy Murray, of course, playing just behind you, is going for the possibility of a record-breaking fifth title here. How extraordinary would that be if he were to achieve it?
Well, I'm not going to watch it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
No, he's got a great chance of winning it. And, he's playing so well, you know, he deserves all the success that he's had, you know, and... This is a great preparation for his Wimbledon and it'll give him a lot of confidence to win this tournament.
Well, who better to hand Roy Emerson that replica trophy to honour his four titles here at the Queen's Club than Leighton Hewitt, the other Aussie, to have four titles here at the Queen's Club. Leighton Hewitt beat Pete Sampras to win the first of his four Queen's Club titles. He's now coaching Bernard Tomic, and what a week he is having. So we spoke about Tomic, Emerson, life on tour and this very special club.
Yeah, when I first came here, I couldn't believe how good these courts were, obviously, and... it's such a prestigious event over so many years, and you just look at the honour board and how many guys, you know, the great names that have won and held up that great trophy, and I always wanted to be a part of that. I kind of got to pinch myself to think that I'm up there with the likes of Becker and McEnroe and these guys, and Andy Murray, obviously, he's won at the last four as well. So it's great to come back here, slightly different capacity now, but really always enjoy this week.
And one of those names is Roy Emerson, and today you had the opportunity to present the honour that you received last year to him. How was that?
Yeah, it was pretty special, obviously. Those older Australian guys have done so much for the sport of tennis, not just in Australia but worldwide, and especially setting up the ATP Tour as well, which this tournament means so much to our tour. So it was pretty special to be out there with Roy today, and obviously another Australian that's won it four times.
And you mentioned Andy Murray, one of those four-time champions. He's the only one with a chance this year to possibly make it five. How incredible an achievement would that be?
Yeah, it would be amazing, especially in his home country as well, here in Great Britain. He's had so much pressure on him so many times when he plays here, and I think he plays some of his best tennis on this particular surface. So it wouldn't surprise me if he went on to win his fifth one this week. He's certainly the favourite going into it, but anything can happen, and I'm sure it will be a worthy champion.
And you're obviously here in Davis Cup capacity, but also in capacity coaching Bernard Tomic. We spoke to him yesterday. He's obviously having a great week. He seems so relaxed and happy. Signs, I guess, that relationship is really going well.
Obviously keeping an eye on all the Australian boys, but Bernie and I have got a pretty close relationship, I think, and I think I can play a part in hopefully helping him go to that next level. And he really enjoys playing on this surface, I think, as well. So, he's through to the quarters so far, and hopefully he can go one or two steps further.
And just finally, most players, when they retire from tennis, even if they intend to come back, they at least take some time off. Not you. You're straight back out here coaching Davis Cup. Is that just a sign of how much you love this sport and love being on tour as well?
Yeah, I think I like Australian tennis more than anything. Obviously it was a great opportunity to take over the Davis Cup, and playing for Australia meant so much to me. And I feel like I have the respect of the playing group, and I think that's the most important thing.
Well, Leighton Hewitt there, who speaks so wonderfully about how much this event and this tournament meant to him throughout his career and actually continues to mean to him, and someone that feels exactly the same as Mr. John McEnroe. And I was privileged enough to get to catch up with him as well.
This was actually my first tournament after I turned pro in 1978, and I lost to a guy by the name of Tony Roach, who taught me a thing or two about volleying that day. So I always vowed to myself I'd try to be as good as him, and I think it worked out pretty well. And next thing I know, I'm getting a call from this great young kid, Milos Raonic. Hey, let's work for, around Wimbledon and Queens. I have this chance to come back here and get treated very nicely. It's a good feeling.
Speaking of which, you've got a 100% record as a coach so far. That's got to feel good.
That would make me think I should quit now, type of thing. But I think he's got it in him to go all the way here. And when I look before the French, even, or even a few months ago, if you said to me who could win Wimbledon, he would have been one of the five or six guys that I picked that actually had a shot at it. I've known him not well, but seen him around, had talks with him in the past. Great young kid. He's real professional. He wants to become the best he can be. He sees what these other guys do, to the efforts they make. He's trying to close the gap on these Murrays and Djokovic's of the world, and he's done a real nice job so far.
How are you coping with the sitting still aspect of being a coach, John? I know that's not something that necessarily comes that easily or naturally to you.
Sitting still is not my forte, so it's definitely different. I sort of feed off energy, so hopefully just give a little bit of that to Milos. And I'm a little antsy there, and so it's nice to change on the get up and stand up on the changeovers and hopefully pump them up a little bit. And it's been fun, but definitely... It's good to go and work out after the match.
We spoke to Peter Fleming a couple of days ago, and he, for one among many, is delighted to see you coaching. One of the things he said was that he thought maybe people hadn't thought of you as a potential coach because of how big a personality you are. Is that something that how you see it? Have you been waiting for this opportunity for a while?
I'm not saying that I've been waiting for it. I have a tennis academy. I like playing with kids. I think particularly the last 5 years or so, when you've seen Boris, for example, and Stefan with Roger. Obviously, Ivan was more of a full-time gig with Andy. But you could see guys coming in and consulting / coaching for not as much a period of time and come in on the bigger ones, which is, fantastic. Who doesn't want to be coaching someone at Wimbledon, for example? And so that... to me, sort of fitting in and make more sense for me. I mean, doing 30, 40 weeks, being out there, I already feel like I'm sort of back out in the tour, which is good in a lot of ways, but you need to have a lot of patience, which not always my strong suit, although 6 kids later, I think I'm better. So it's been fun to sort of get back in the mix a little bit, and it feels good right now. So if I can pick and choose some times, and hopefully if Milos says, look, let's work a little before certain other events, and he has a home in New York, so this thing could be real nice.
Well, you've mentioned Ivan. How was it seeing him around the place, seeing him in the locker room? What's that like?
He hasn't changed at all, but he did a great job with Andy before. I think he was a difference in Andy winning. He won two majors, and I'm not surprised. I sort of expected it, but you're always a little bit like, okay, here it is again. And, you know, he comes in, and he's meticulous, and that's what a lot of the players want and need, and he definitely worked. I can see definitely going to the well again. If I was Andy, why wouldn't I? He's playing great. He's been knocking at the door. He's trying to, you know, get over that hump against Novak, and hopefully my guy can get close to those guys.
Well, just finally, we do seem to be edging closer to a Murray-Raonic final, and that would mean McEnroe-Lendl.
That would be absolutely fantastic. I look forward to it. Maybe we could play doubles before the singles, the four of us.
We'll make it happen, John.
I'm ready.
So, Andy Murray and Ivan Lendl, consider the gauntlet very much laid down by Mr. John McEnroe. I don't know whether this has been run past Milos Raonic or not, but we, for two, very much would like to see that doubles match, wouldn't we? Who cares about the final of the Aegon Championships? That is what we want to see.
Amazing. I'm just thinking, though, who would come out on top in that one? I mean, they've all got their strengths. There's a couple of weaknesses in there as well. Some big weapons, especially on this surface. Who would you go for?
Well, in terms of the legends, the super coaches, everybody seems to be in agreement that it's all about fitness. Skill level seems to be pretty irrelevant when it gets to that stage of life, or so they tell us. In which case, I think John McEnroe has the edge, because I think he's the fittest man of his age, probably anywhere in the world, in any sport. Andy Murray and Milos Raonic, well, let's go with the ranking. So Andy's got that edge. So toss of the coin.
So you firmly sat on the fence there. You didn't give me an answer at all. You said one from one team and one from the other team.
OK, I will go for Milos Raonic, John McEnroe. I saw the steel in John's eyes when he talked about Ivan Lendl and how much fire he would have in his belly to try and get that victory. And I cast my mind back to a Champions Tour event that I did with John McEnroe about 5 years ago, and it was actually Ivan Lendl's very first event on the Champions Tour. He took a long time to decide to play on the Champions Tour. John had obviously been a stalwart of the tour for a long time, but it was the first time they'd met since retirement. And actually, the match ended rather limply with Lendl having to, well, literally limply, with Lendl having to withdraw, and you'd think that might have dampened John McEnroe's celebration slightly. It did the exact opposite. I mean, John McEnroe celebrated like he'd won Wimbledon. It was extraordinary. He did a lap of honour of the court, fist pumping in every corner. He came to speak to David and I in the mix zone afterwards, and boy, was he pumped. I mean, he would give every last sinew to be Ivan Lendl in any circumstance, let alone on a tennis court.
I think as I look across, you mentioned opposition courtside, I can see straight down a gangway and there's a picture of a roaring Andy Murray, four-time champion here, but it's not swaying me. I think I'm also going to go with the Raonic-McEnroe doubles combination to beat Lendl and Murray. We've now, though, got to make it happen. Who do we speak to?
No pressure or anything. I mean, as you say that, I do realise that we have had Peter Fleming on this podcast, who's a pretty reliable source, saying John McEnroe is the best doubles player and best partner in the world. So I feel pretty confident in our choice here, Gigi.
But who do we speak to make this happen?
We know some people.
Do we?
David Law?
Let's do it. David, if you're listening, I know you're listening, we have to make this happen.
Should we talk about the semi-finals, Gigi? Murray against Cilic, two former champions. That kicks us off at 1:15 p.m. It's safe to say Murray's the favourite, but Cilic, this is just the week he needed, isn't it?
Yes, it's been really good for Cilic. Champion here, 2012. Hasn't had Goran Ivanišević here. He had to disappear and do other bits and pieces, but you spoke to him earlier in the week for the tennis podcast. It's good to see Cilic playing well and with this confidence. He likes this surface against Andy Murray. Andy Murray has the head. I think it's, 10-2 in favour of Murray. They've met a couple of times at Queen's. Both occasions, they've gone the way of Andy Murray. So he would start the favourite. But I think it's going to be an interesting contest just to see how Andy Murray now, to see if he steps things up. He had Nicola Mahu, really tricky for Murray, having won in Hertogenbosch and come here. And the courts were really slippery at that point. Then he's had the British double act of Aliash Bednia and Kyle Edmund. And now the level has changed. Once again, he steps things up against Marin Cilic, and the matches are now running out ahead of Wimbledon. So I think it's a really interesting test for Murray.
I'm sure Goran is coaching from afar. I'm sure he can coach via text. They're super coaches after all.
Remote coaching. I mean, he'll be having a word in Marin Cilic's ear, and I'm sure tactics will be passed on. But how do you feel about that one?
I mean, Murray is obviously the favourite, but I do think this is a step up in terms of test than what he's had this week. And I think it's also fair to say that Andy Murray has not played brilliantly at any point this week. There have been moments of brilliance. There always are. He's been good enough. He's been solid. But he hasn't been really tested and he hasn't been brilliant. So if Cilic can produce something special, he is a Grand Slam champion, after all. If he can produce something special, I think there could be a bit of danger for Andy Murray. I think it could actually be a really, really good match, as could the second semi-final, Milos Raonic against Bernard Tomic. It's super coaches wherever you look, because we've got Leighton Hewitt, John McEnroe. I mean, it's just a smorgasbord.
We don't look at the head-to-head for that one, or we don't think it's a close match, because Raonic leads it 3-love. They met, I believe, in Brisbane at the start of this year, and Tomic retired in this match. Tomic's never taken a set off Milos Raonic, but we've spoken to Bernard Tomic this week. He's looking really, really relaxed. He was very smiley, a little bit scared of the thunderstorm. He did the regrouping.
Bless him.
I know, he was okay that we were there. He did the regrouping.
What would have happened if we hadn't been there? I mean, who knows what would have happened to him? He'd still be cowering in a corner.
It's when he looked at us and said, "Aren't we all afraid?" And we all looked blankly at him, thinking, "No, it's just you, Bernie." But it's nice to see him playing like this. It's nice to see him so relaxed. He talked about needing to distract himself and keep his mind busy, and the Australian journalists were really interested in talking to him about how in previous rounds he's fought back when he's been down, and he said, "I'm just feeling good, I'm taking it match by match, etc, etc." But I think with Hewitt in his corner, the confidence he seems to be playing with, he had a really bad head-to-head against Gilles Muller, but he turned it round, he pulled it out the bag and he won. As I say, it's a shocker against Raonic in terms of head-to-head, but this is a new day, it's a new surface, and I think it's going to be very interesting.
He suddenly looks very unburdened, Bernard Tomic. He's looked burdened in the past. Of course, he has had some missteps in terms of his relationship with the media, with the fans. But we've talked about him this week, haven't we, Gigi? And there's a really good, well, I say kid, I mean, he's 23. To us, he's a kid. There's a really good kid in there, isn't he? And he loves his tennis. And seeing him play in this unburdened way, you're seeing the best of Bernard Tomic. And I think the world deserves to see that.
Yeah, and it's nice. I think we've also seen a slightly different side of Milos Raonic. People I've spoken to said, yeah, sometimes it is quite tough to get excited about how he plays because it is quite functional, it's quite robotic. But we've seen a couple of smiles at the change of ends. I think the addition of John McEnroe is great, and a few chats we've had with him. There is that, it's sort of a sensitive, sweet soul there, a good sense of humour. And I think, so it's an interesting one in terms of, we've just seen a little bit of the characters of both of them. You add in the super coaches who'll be in the boxes by the side of the court, and I'm going to tip Raonic to come through this ultimately, but I think it'll be a good test for Tomic.
Absolutely. Well, there you have it, the semi-final lineup. It's Raonic against Tomic, and it's Murray versus Cilic, but it's also Lendl versus Ivanišević, well, a remote Ivanišević, and Leighton Hewitt versus John McEnroe. It's going to be good. We'll be bringing you another podcast after those semi-finals. They are nightly. There are two more to go after this one, so stick with us. Aegon Championships Tennis Podcast, thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.